Conference record has joined the conference.
Hey, Bob, are you still on the line?
I am here.
Excellent. All right. I'll go ahead and give an introduction. We can get started. This is Dylan Muhlberg of Grateful Web. I am joined by legendary music photographer Bob Minkin. Bob's eye for capturing the perfect moment reveals his subjects with unparalleled intimacy. As a teenager of the mid-1970s, Bob began following the Grateful Dead extensively after a nearly two-long-year hiatus from touring. His tact and respect got him closer to the band than any other photographer before him. He's become the chief photographer for Relics magazine during those developmental years of the publication and has since developed an expansive career with numerous publications as continuing clients. The newest milestone of Bob's career and the collective Deadhead world is the release of the Grateful Dead photo retrospective, Live Dead. Today, we have the pleasure of Bob's company to get the lowdown. Thanks for joining me today, Bob.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's likewise a pleasure. Live Dead has been in the making since you snapped your first amateur shots of the band at the Grateful Dead Summer Comeback Tour of 76. What initially inspired you to bring a camera to shows?
Well, you know, initially it was to have a souvenir for myself of the experience, because I like collecting things, you know. I was a stamp collector before I got into music and stuff. So, you know, something to remind me of the great time that I had.
Perfect. And the early and mid-70s saw the Dead in a same level of popularity with younger rock and roll fans, at least in the States. But what other bands were you into as a teenager before you became a bona fide Deadhead?
Oh, well, I liked, it all kind of happened sort of at once, you know, when I got into what I call good music. It was Jimi Hendrix, you know, Clapton and Cream, the Allman Brothers, Jethro Tull, Grateful Dead, you know. Somehow the Grateful Dead rose to the cream rose to the top, so to speak.
Absolutely. And the Dead around this time were cautious when it came to outside documentation of their concerts, including tapers and photographers. What do you think changed in the course of that decade that led them to be more generously open to that documentation?
Well, you know, taping is a whole other, you know, world. So that, you know, that I can't comment a lot on. But in terms of photography, for me, it just became once I you know, when you're a familiar face and you're around a lot, plus, you know, at the time I was shooting for Relics magazine, which gave me some kind of official accreditation. I mean, before that, I just had to, at some shows, sneak my camera in and, you know, watch myself and, you know, get in early, sleep out at night so you can get a good seat. But as time went on and I met people in the band, people who worked for the band, I got trusted. And, you know, that's really what it's all about, being trusted and allowed to get closer to them.
Yeah, absolutely, and you can see that even in those late 70s shots backstage in either East Coast or West Coast, you're on the inside that early on. So you compiled your career of iconic Grateful Dead photography in this brand-new retrospective photo journal, Live Dead, and it's a stunning large hardcover book, semi-chronological portfolio filled with thousands of your photographs, annotations.
Well, 700 or so.
700, it looks like thousands. And
yeah, right.
It's jotting. Additionally, it's filled with praises and perspective from surviving members of the Dead and their close extended family. Did this project bring that impact to realization about your photography, everything that it meant to the scene and the fans?
Well, you know, seeing it all together in a book like this and having people like Steve Parrish and Tom Constantin be involved, you know, in writing a foreword and a preface, it gives me some sort of validation since I started out as a fan and just evolved through the years. So, you know, hearing nice things from people like Trixie Garcia and Bob Weir, just, you know, it's sort of, it is not that I was needing or looking for a validation, but it's just nice to have.
Oh, absolutely, and getting that retrospective from everything over all those years and all those pictures you took, it's altogether, it's really a gem for collectors and for the band, I'm sure. So in Blair Jackson's introduction to your book, it details your experience of your first seeing the Grateful Dead and how it starkly contrasted your expectations at the time from hearing the rocking recordings of Skullfuck, Europe 72, or Live Dead. Were you deterred from your, were you deterred from that hyper interest of seeing the band at that time?
No, I mean, you know, before I saw the Grateful Dead, I got to, my first Grateful Dead related concert was seeing Jerry Garcia and Merle Saunders and the and some various Jerry Garcia bands, like with Mickey Hopkins, like 2 years prior. So I knew how good Jerry could, you know, could be live. But when the Grateful Dead came back in 76, it, you know, like I said in my introduction, it just wasn't the Grateful Dead I was hoping to see. And, you know, I stuck with it. I mean, because, you know, I mean, a year later in 77, they were, you know, breathing fire. So, so it really didn't deter me. It was just a little disappointing at first.
Oh, sure. Well, it's, and back, it's not the age we're in now with archiving of live concert recordings at our fingertips. It was what was available.
Yeah, you can just online and listen to just about anything these days.
You can listen to just about anything. So you have a true gift for capturing intimacy in the musicians you've photographed. It doesn't matter if it's a 300-person room or giant stadium. The observer still gets that same next-to-stage side feeling. Could you recall two memorable experiences in photographing the Dead? Maybe a gargantuan venue and then an extremely intimate venue?
Certainly. You know, in terms of intimate venues, I mean, it probably didn't get more intimate than this club I saw them in Amsterdam during their 1981 European tour. You know, it was a very small room, and, you know, it was maybe just a few hundred people there. And getting up to the front of the stage wasn't too difficult, and the cool thing was there was that at that time in their live shows, they didn't, in their normal shows, they didn't stand very close together anymore. But in this particular club, they were practically right on top of each other. So that, you know, that was terrific because it provided me with, like, there was a lot of bit more band interaction with them standing only a few feet apart, you know. At a tremendous show, like, let's say, Giant Stadium, you know, in 1987 or 1989, you know, I might take a different tact there. I mean, one really cool shot in the book, instead of getting very close and intimate, I wound up shooting from the upper deck, and I got this incredible view of just thousands and thousands of people in front of the stage with the Dead, you know, playing for them. It's quite a dramatic shot and contrast to seeing them a few years earlier in Europe in a little club.
Oh, yeah, sure. Can definitely imagine stark contrast. By the mid-80s, you were authorized by the Dead organization to shoot from the photo pit next to the stage, which was extremely limited access in those days. Your shots from the crowd previous are equally stunning, however. The band against the horizon and backdrop of red rocks or action shots like you just described. Did being close up change how you photographed the band?
Well, you know, Not really. I mean, I still tried to cover the event from all angles, you know, from like walking into the show. I wanted to have really the complete experience. So, I mean, even from waiting online for tickets or people walking into the venue. I mean, for me, the audience was almost as, you know, pretty much as important as shooting the band, you know. So although I had, you know, pretty primo access then, that didn't stop me from, you know, moving back into the house and hanging, you know, shooting from the audience point of view. But knowing that I can go up front and get those close-up shots just gave me a little more, like, latitude, I guess.
Sure, absolutely. I find it interesting that though you traveled with the band all over, capturing their career from the mid-70s until current, you didn't move to the Bay Area until the early 90s. Can you talk about the identity of being an East Coast Deadhead and how those fans relate differently to the band than California Deadheads?
Yeah. I mean, I first visited California right after high school in the around 77, and I visited here a number of times in the 70s and 80s before my wife and I finally moved here in 1990. But there is a stark contrast. I mean, I noticed when I saw out here after I moved was at Shoreline, and to me the crowd seemed kind of lethargic, like like Grateful Dead came on stage. Oh, okay, the show's about to begin. I mean, at Madison Square Garden in New York, when the Grateful Dead entered the stage, I mean, it was like, thunderous. I mean, it was the building shook. So maybe having the band so close to home here was more of a, the local thing, and seeing them in New York was more of a, for the people there, more maybe it was more special. Well, I don't think it was more special, but it was just different. So, yeah, the East Coast was definitely a livelier bunch, I'd say, as compared to the West Coast. And, you know, for me, moving here and seeing that, I've eventually took some of the edge off living 25 years here in Marin County, took a little of my East Coast edge off.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of great transplanting from East to West. Nearly as vital as your photographs of the band, as you just mentioned, was your documentation of the eclectic Deadheads. In lot before the show, during the show. What did these crowd and fan shots reveal about the Grateful Dead concert scene?
Well, you know, to me there was no, I mean, I've been to lots of concerts and, you know, a lot of bands have devoted fans, but I've never seen, you know, anything like, you know, the Grateful Dead and the relationship with their fans was like, no other band. And in the lot scene, I mean, especially in the older days, people seem to really, look out for one another, you know, like the old, you know, line of song, strangers stopping strangers, you know, just to shake their hand. It was, it really was like that. I mean, I was alone at some shows where I got separated from my friends or for some reason I was there alone. And I was, you know, I'd be with a group of people. I was kind of like adopted by them, you know, welcomed into their inner group to hang with for the show. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think separated, Grateful Dead fans from a lot of other fans of other bands.
Yeah, the unlimited devotion. While the Dead were always popular among legions of devoted fans, the biggest phenomenon of their career was the extreme surge of mainstream interest and popularity in the later 80s. Selling out multiple night runs at 50,000-person football stadiums was the norm. Did the Megadeth era affect how you photographed the band? What changed?
Yeah, it became tougher. You know, at those big shows, especially, they always seem to be in the summer, and it always seemed to be hot out. So you have to have stamina. I mean, there was a lot of stamina involved, and the crowd was definitely, at least on the East Coast shows I was at, became a little bit more of a rougher kind of crowd, you know. So people weren't so schooled maybe in, you know, what I call like a professional concert goer. You know, maybe it was more alcohol perhaps, but it was definitely a little bit of a harder-edged crowd. Security became more belligerent at some shows. I mean, you know, I was at that show in the Brendan Byrne Arena, October 89, when that, you know, that poor kid, Adam Katz, you know, was found, you know, dead after the show and, you know things mm-hmm. like that. I mean, the security was real, real tough and, it made it, you know, made life more difficult, you know, for everybody.
Yeah. It seems like it changed a lot of, how the Dead wanted to do things. Just got too big.
Crashing and stuff became a little more prevalent, things like that.
Yeah. All the rotten stuff. So, flash forward a little bit to the 90s. The loss of Jerry Garcia and the end of the band was crushing for so many. Live Dead details around the time of Garcia's death, the influx of media pursuing you for your decades of photo documenting Garcia and the Dead, it occurred to me that that could have been a very powerful personal moment. Do you recall your emotions during that whirlwind of August 95?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, on that very day, I was besieged by phone calls and, from, you know, media and magazines, and, you know, it was kind of bizarre, you know. At that time, to make photos to send to a publication, you actually had to print them in a darkroom or send a slide. I mean, so I say there were, you know, I was printing photos because some of these publications were important, you know, that needed to have things like, you know, Relics and other magazines. So I say that there was tears in the developer, in the liquor developer, printing those photos. It was just, just being in a strange zone for those few days, and then going to the memorial concert a few days later. A memorial at Golden Gate Park a few days later. It was
and
good
just,
to be there, though. I had to go to Haight-Ashbury just to be around other people, I remember.
Sure. And just being inquired for business during such a personal moment of grief and loss was also what
It was strange. It was strange. I mean, I had to deliver on some levels, but I really wasn't I'd rather have been doing something else, you know.
Yeah, and it works both ways. The photography, I'm sure the pictures you had aided a lot in representing the band and their legacy at that moment of the end.
It was important, important that some of these things were out there, you know, that at that time for people to see and relate to. I had to deliver, you know, deliver the goods, as they say, despite...
Absolutely. And since the passing of Garcia, something I did not know about your career is your professional graphic designer and the graphic design art that you contributed for those later Dick's Ticks releases, the Dick Lombardo archival release series. What inspired you to contribute what you did for the cover art? You talked about that stamp art stuff earlier.
Right. Well, that was like a dream, you know. I mean, most people are in a graphic designer or something might fantasize about doing an album cover for their favorite band, you know. And in the early around 2000 or so, early 2000s, I had that opportunity came to light. You know, the person that was doing their work had left, and I was introduced to them to make a presentation to their management, and they liked what they saw. So once I got and I said, well, you know, what kind of layout, what kind of designs are you thinking of? They said, no, it's all up to you, whatever you come up with. You know, I was like, wow, a blank slate, which is almost, you know, it's difficult, you know, it's good to get some guidance, but I didn't have any guidance. So I presented a variety of ideas for the Dick's Picks series. And, you know, this is the kind of project that allowed me to really pour my heart into because it was for a client that I loved, you know, more than just about any other, anything else. So to have that opportunity and to have it be well received and to go on for a few years was, was an amazing experience. You know, being on the inside and working on some of those CD and DVD projects back then.
Yeah, I've been looking at the graphic art you've done for years and had no idea you were the author. So that was.
You got to read the small print.
Exactly. Always read the fine print.
I do.
Indeed. Yeah. Well. Live and learn. Perhaps more remarkable than the long, strange trip, the 30 years of Grateful Dead, is what's happened since. So many different stellar bands featuring members of the Dead and just highbrow tribute projects. You're heavily involved in capturing what's current in the ever-thriving Deadhead world in the Bay Area. Can you talk about your involvement with Phil Lesh's Terrapin Crossroads and Bob Weir's DRI Studios?
The post years, what I call the post years, the post Jerry years, I mean, at that, when he passed away, I couldn't certainly imagine how things were going to, pan out, play out, you know, and, I was lucky to be involved with Phil Lesh and friends when he first started playing again in around 96 or 97 at the Maritime Hall in San Francisco. And I was introduced to them and I had, you know, great access and to photograph and to be there for that. So, you know, that's gone on for years. And then, you know, and a few years ago when Terrapin Crossroads opened almost simultaneously with TRI and the Sweetwater Club in Mill Valley, you know, that provided an incredible renaissance of music here in Marin County where it's like music 7 nights a week. So with TRI Studios, I was hired to be their staff, like house photographer for about a year or so. So, you know, being on the inside of that and shooting some of the amazing, because the things they had there really weren't open to the public. It was kind of like an invite-only kind of thing. It was a small room, so maybe 100 people at the most, you know, could be there for certain events. So I was very fortunate, very, very fortunate to get to be involved in that. and continue to be involved with shooting events at Terrapin Crossroads and at Sweetwater. I'm their house photographer. So, again, that affords me the opportunity to capture and document, you know, almost everything that passes through, you know, in the Bay Area, which is a situation I don't take lightly, and I'm honored and blessed to be part of.
Yeah, I think it's a wonder how it's developed since. And Bob, I'm 27, but I have this access to their entire this gigantic catalog of music, and I can still see, I can still live those feelings through post projects. It's not the Grateful Dead, but it's a proper continuation. So for my generation as well, it's a blessing in a totally different way.
Yeah, and it is for people, you know, older as well. You know, if you don't carry the baggage with you, you know, Grateful Dead, like it has to be, you know, I mean, if you just walk in off the street, the music is fantastic, you know, and, you know, it's and other bands too. There's bands around, you know, like New Monsoon and ALO and Mother Hips and New Moon Alice. I mean, there's all these bands that are sort of picked up the torch, you know, in a way. I mean, in their own way, you know, and with that similar vibe. And it continues on, which I'm real, real glad, you know. I mean, in the book, I didn't want it to end when Jerry passed, so I did devote a number of pages to the post-Jerry years with sections of Terrapin, Sweetwater, and, you know, the individual band members, what they're doing, up till this year.
Yeah. And many more casual fans who would get your book because it's just beautiful photography wouldn't have known about what's been happening since, and it's cool that it's educational about that as well, because so much has gone on since.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some people who I know aren't particularly like what I'd call, you know, real deadhead type people, they have bought the book because it's a cultural history. It's part of a, you know, Americana, you know, it's part of the, you know, culture of 70s and 80s, I mean, of a time, you know, reminiscent, you know, from the 60s. So it's interesting when I see that. When people like that buy the book, it makes me happy. You know, it's not just the Grateful Dead; it's a cultural phenomenon. You know, the time.
But absolutely, and like I said earlier, Bob, it really is a milestone, a personal milestone, and for the entire scene as part of this archiving that's happened since, and you know, along with Santa Cruz.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's been so much archiving recently, and it's bringing so much more access.
Right. I mean, in this book, most of the photos, you know, I said there's over 700 photos. By far, the majority have not been seen by most people. I mean, a photo may have been published in Relics, you know, in 1978 or something. But like I said, most people have not seen most. So, I mean, me as a fan, if all of a sudden a book came out that had hundreds and hundreds of Grateful Dead photos through the 70s and 80s, you know, so that I had never seen before, I'd be blown away. I'd run out and get that, you know, I'd be happy to see something like that too. So,
yeah.
You know, it's really, for people who follow this, it's going to be pretty mind blowing.
Absolutely, Bob, your gift to us, and, want to encourage all of our readers and listeners to go out and get a copy of Live Dead for their own sake and their own education, and just to gaze upon your photos. No doubt the retrospective of the band will contextualize the Dead as an iconic American rock band and the close relationships with the fans and insider media personnel. So really wanted to thank you for your time today, Bob. That's all the questions that I got for you. Grateful Web and I certainly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go ahead and have this up real quick on the website and shoot you an email, show you how it looks when we got the conversation up.
Hey, can you do me a favor, though? Can you put there's a link that, you know, people can get this book, you know, through all the usual channels, you know, online and bookstores and such. But
sure.
I have a link for people to buy it directly from me where I would sign it for them. And
oh, wow.
Works out better for me if people do that. So if I gave you that link, are you able to put that link in there?
Absolutely. I can put a little text at the bottom for an autographed copy by from Bob Minkin directly and link it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would be great.
Absolutely, Bob. And that's what it's all about. So we will go ahead and get that in that way, and I will contact you as soon as that's ready.
Okay. Do you need me to give you the link now, or?
You can go ahead, and I don't know if I have your personal email. Dennis McNally set this all up for us, so I can go ahead and contact Dennis with your email, and we can just get that information and that link that way.
Okay. What's your email, so if you don't mind? I have my email.
Yeah, no, go ahead and write it. Go ahead and write it down. It's D.Y. Mühlberg. It's D.Y.M.U.H.L.B.E.R.G. @gmail.
At Gmail? Okay. So that's D.Y.M.U.H.L.B.E.R.G.
Yes.
Gmail. Okay. Great. Yeah, look forward to seeing it all out there. I always wonder how these things all sound afterwards.
Oh yeah, no, and I've done so many of these, and it's not it looks great on the page after, you know, all the editing and you get it down, and we got like 120,000 followers, so a lot of people are going to see this interview for get known on the book. Yeah, absolutely, Bob. Hey, thanks so much for your time. It was great chatting with you.
Okay, you too. Thanks, Dylan. Take care.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5 minutes. The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.